Well, good morning, everyone. I am happy to be here this morning, a beautiful morning driving from Lacombe. Yes, I come from British Columbia most recently, but that's not where I'm originally from. I'm from Cape Breton Island originally. Anybody here ever visited Cape Breton Island? Oh, wow, lots of hands. Well, you might hear my Eastern accent come out as I talk here. So, yeah, I grew up there on Cape Breton Island and was able to have the privilege of going to Canadian University College and getting my degree in pastoral ministry. And I pastored for 12 years. I started in Newfoundland. Anybody there? Anybody been to Newfoundland? Yes? Okay. Quite a few hands showed for that as well. So yes, I started in Newfoundland pastoring in Lethbridge. I used to tell people that I was from Lethbridge, Newfoundland, and they'd say, "You mean Alberta, Lethbridge, Alberta." I said, "No, Lethbridge, Newfoundland. There's a Lethbridge, Newfoundland as well." So was there in Bonavista, had a church in Bonavista, and had a church in Glovertown. So I had three churches. 2.5 years there, and then I moved to British Columbia, and I was 10 years in the British Columbia Conference. Pastored in Kelowna. Everyone's familiar with Kelowna, I'm sure. You probably have all been there more than once. And so I was in the Rutland Church for several years, then went to Aldergrove, Dave Jameson's church. He's there. He's been there for a while now. And then I came back to Kelowna, to the Kelowna Church. And there's five churches in the Kelowna area, so there's opportunity to serve many years in that in the Okanagan Valley. So I was there in the Kelowna area for about roughly almost 8 years, I guess, altogether. And so I am very happy to be here. I was involved in communications, the BC Conference, for many years, working with Stan Jensen, and I enjoyed that very much. And now the opportunity to work with you. And indeed, that is what I like to do, is to work with you, help you understand some of these technologies and how we can use them. And this morning, this presentation is entitled Reaching the Next 1 Billion. And the whole purpose of this presentation is to kind of build the landscape, the media landscape of where we are today, and to highlight how God is using the media landscape. And that's the purpose. This afternoon, or even this morning, I guess, we have another seminar, a seminar for a media. And we're going to talk more specifically about how to use some of these technologies and for ministry. But we're going to highlight kind of the situation that we're in today. You know, when I was 12 years old, I remember my dad decided it was time for us to get a new computer. And so we went to Costco. We went over to the United States for a vacation, and we visited Costco, and we always had fun doing that, you know, going on vacation together as a family. And so my dad bought us this new computer. It was the best computer that Costco sold, the Compaq 386, ran at a whopping 16 megahertz, had a 40 megabyte hard drive. The sales clerk at Costco said, he assured my dad, "You will never fill that hard drive." How many of you have had the Compaq 386? Okay. How many of you still have the Compaq 386? That's good. I'm glad you put it aside in the closet maybe, right? And you know, I never forget that day because it was an exciting day to get a new computer. Probably more memorable for my dad because it cost him $3,500 for that computer. But comparing that with what we have in our pockets today, you know, your cell phones, you know, this computer is nothing. You know, the computers that we carry in our pockets, you know, our cell phones are our computers, right? These things are thousands of megahertz. This was 16 megahertz. You know, our phones are thousands of megahertz. And they have, you know, huge hard drives. I know someone showed me his iPhone 4S. You know, iPhones are what, 16 gigabytes? You know, 32 gigabytes? And this is 40 megabytes. So there's a big difference. We've come a long, long way. And so this was the beginning of communications and technology for me. And now over 20 years ago, many things have changed in the computer and technology world. So we've gone from megabytes to gigabytes to terabytes overnight. And every Christmas, you know, watching the hustle and the bustle of crazy shoppers, you know, I can't help but think about this Compaq 386. And how on Christmas morning, you know, people tear open those precious gifts and the excitement of it all, but eventually the novelty wears off. The gift that was once so precious ends up as techno trash or handed off to someone else. A newer version of latest gadget will arrive that has more megapixels or is smaller or is faster or has better battery life. Those Christmas gifts will mostly be forgotten, but the technology is not going away anytime soon. I believe that God is using the Seventh-day Adventist Church worldwide to use the unique opportunities and technologies we have before us to lead people to Jesus. Amen. You know, it's often said that all roads lead to Rome. And in fact, they once did. You know, the Romans, they built a network of roads that were one of the greatest engineering accomplishments of all time. The Roman road system spanned more than 400,000 kilometers, including more than 80,000 kilometers of paved roads. Although the Roman road system was originally built for the speedy movement and accessibility of the Roman troops throughout the empire, it was also used for many other purposes. The roads provided an opportunity for trade. The roads made travel and communication possible that allowed for the spread of the gospel. And so Rome's impressive and enduring transportation network was of such an extent that it stands as a historical example of a connective technology linking together a globalized empire, transforming education, communication, and evangelism. In 2007, a social media revolution occurred when Greenpeace, the Japanese government, and a humpback whale called Mr. Splashy Pants all met for the first time. It started when word got out that the Japanese government was planning a huge science experiment that involved killing 50 humpback whales in the Southern Ocean, studying them and then selling their meat. So when Greenpeace heard about this, they were irate, and they decided to hold a poll to name a specific humpback whale and raise awareness of this predicament. Social media giants such as Dig, Reddit, Facebook got hold of this story, and they started to spread the news from one end of the globe to the other. In turn, additional news agencies started airing the story on local TV stations worldwide. People responded to the Greenpeace name poll, and after receiving over 150,000 responses, the name Mr. Splashy Pants was the winner. The slogan "Save Mr. Splashy Pants" rang out as people displayed signs and logos, wore printed t-shirts, created website flash videos that put a face to the name, and created a very famous whale. The worldwide publicity regarding the future for Missy Splashy Pants got the attention of the Japanese government, and they decided to scrap their previous plans, which in turn allowed for the safe journey of Mr. Splashy Pants and his friends across the ocean. That's a great story, the power of the internet. You know, communication and technologies have come a long way since Morse sent the first telegraph in 1844 from Washington, D.C. that said, "What has God wrath?" Isn't that amazing? That was the first telegraph ever sent. What has God wrath? Our current technologically connected society of social media has not only transformed the way people interact and react, it has become a vital link to a connection the world takes for granted. Digital technologies have widened the reach and means to communicate in ways never before possible. Social networking platforms, such as YouTube, I'm sure you're familiar with YouTube, Facebook, Twitter. We're going to talk more about some of these in our next seminar. But they allow users to update information about themselves in real time without social or geographic boundaries. And so just as the Roman road system in the New Testament time enabled the rapid spread of the gospel, so the internet has become an effective worldwide channel for evangelism. Well, let's look at Matthew 24, verse 14 here for a moment. And we're going to explore how God is using the internet as an evangelistic tool to spread the gospel. Matthew 24, 14. It reads, "This gospel of the kingdom shall be preached in the whole world as a testimony to all the nations, and then the end will come." You know, traditionally, preaching the gospel to the whole world has been viewed as one person in front of another person, face to face, or one person in front of a group. But we are fast approaching a technological phenomena where preaching the gospel, as Matthew 24 says, in the whole world, will soon become a digital reality. Do you ever think about that? You know, the YouTube video called Social Media Revolution. It shows in a very persuasive way that social media is revolutionizing our world. It states that it took radio 38 years to reach 50 million. It took TV 13 years to reach 50 million. It took the internet 4 years to reach 50 million. And it only took Facebook 9 months to reach 100 million. Million dedicated users. You know, there seems to be a strong feeling amongst Christian leaders that churches should and must engage in digital media. A blogger, lay guy, said, "I believe that the invention of print, radio, and TV combined pale in comparison to the potential online social media has in terms of reaching the world for Jesus." And Pastor Zach claims that Jesus went where the people who needed him most were. And right now, they use social media. Okay, a little activity here. Pick a number. I want everyone just to pick a number, any number, and put it in your mind, okay? Everyone got a number? So now turn to the person beside you and tell them your number, just right now. Just tell them the number you chose. Okay, well, it sounds like some of the people have picked the same number. All right, so you told the person beside you just to make sure that you're honest about your number. Okay, so you told the person beside you the number you picked. How many of you chose a number larger than 1 million? Why not? Why not? We don't use it? Well, maybe. That's possible. In 1998, Larry Page and Sergey Brin incorporated Google while still graduate students at Stanford University. I think everyone's heard of Google in this room, I'm sure. According to Fortune Small Business Magazine, internet users perform over 150 million searches a day on the Google search engine. The Google search engine can access over 2 billion pages in 74 different languages. One study recently showed that Google users used the search engine 13 million hours in 1 month. Compared that with Yahoo, that came in second with 5.4 million hours. So how do they get so big? I don't have the expertise to answer that question, but I can tell you that it began with their initial vision. The word Google comes from a mathematical term that is the number one followed by 100 zeros. And so they picked the name before anyone performed a single search on their engine. They began with a vision. While most people are likely to pick a number between 14 and 98, how many of you picked a number between 14 and 98? Okay. Brin and Page decided to pick a Google one with 100 zeros. Now, Jim Reese, chief operations engineer at Google, says this about this company's founders. He says, "It takes a lot of confidence and courage to go ahead and do that. Be huge. It's rare to find people who think on such grand scale and are also able to create a great product at the same time." So, let's look at a few quick stats here. If you do a quick search on Google, it will confirm that approximately 2.5 billion people use the internet on a daily basis. Approximately 80% of the population in Canada and the United States are active users of the internet. Experts are predicting approximately 3 to 4 billion active internet users worldwide in 2 to 3 more years. There are currently 900 million Facebook users, 500 million Twitter users, and we're going to talk more about that in the next seminar. Well, what about cell phones? Well, Mark Donovan says here that digital communication has evolved rapidly in the last few years with an ever-increasing number of ways for internet users to communicate with one another. The world now has nearly as many cell phone subscriptions as inhabitants. The UN Telecom Agency says that there were about 6 billion cell phone subscriptions by the end of 2011. Roughly one for 86 of every 100 people in the world. In a report on Thursday, just this Thursday, October the 11th, 2012, the International Communication Union said China alone accounted for 1 billion subscriptions, and India is expected to hit the 1 billion mark this year. The first commercial text message was sent in December of 1992. And today, the number of text messages sent and received every day exceeds the total population of the planet. The total number of text messages sent globally tripled between 2007 and 2010, from an estimated 1.8 trillion to a staggering 6.1 trillion. Trillion. I don't remember learning that number in school, but it's numbers that we hear frequently now. Trillion. So in other words, close to 200,000 text messages are sent every second. Every second. So in assuming an average cost of 7 cents per text in 2010, text message traffic is generating an estimated $812,000 every minute, or around $14,000 every second. You know, those numbers have increased. These are 2010 statistics. Yeah, during the United States presidential election in 2008, the Obama campaign became known as the networked campaign for its extensive use of the internet and social media tools. Obama was able to raise a record-breaking $744 million for his election, in contrast to Hillary Clinton's campaign of $233 million. So how was Obama's campaign so successful in raising such a substantial amount of money? It was through the skillful use of online fundraising tools that provided an inexpensive and easy way for supporters to repeatedly donate small amounts over the duration of the campaign. The Obama campaign surpassed every major political campaign in the use of the internet as a political mobilization tool, both in the U.S. and in the world at large. The internet provided a powerful tool to mobilize supporters that was easily accessible and familiar. The Obama campaign's focus was to use the internet to link people and communities amongst themselves, while centralizing knowledge and providing tools for interaction, such as the MyBarackObama.com website and centralized fundraising initiatives. And so, we ask the question, then, why do people use the internet? Well, people use the internet for pretty much everything these days. So the top six reasons people use the internet is, first of all, email. Secondly, to gather information. Thirdly, to do online banking. Fourth, to share photos, videos, and files. We're coming into social media tools now. Fifthly, for geographic navigation services, such as Google Maps. And sixthly, for shopping online. I think this is amazing here, this last part. U.S. online holiday shopping season reaches a record $32.6 billion for November to December period, up 12% versus the year before. That's a lot of money being spent during the holiday season, and majority of that is because of online shopping. Makes it easy for people to purchase. So I want you to note here that the second top reason people use the internet is, why? To gather information, including information about your churches in their areas. A well-known fact, with approximately 300 million websites online, if your church or ministry does not have an active, up-to-date website to the rest of the world, it's as if you don't exist. That's the digital reality we live in. You know, millions of people are looking for answers about God. They're looking for a spiritual connection. And since the internet is a pull medium, unlike literature and radio, with which were push mediums, the internet is their front line source for information. In 2006, while I was pastoring in Aldergrove, BC, I was involved in teaching computers. We had a computer program for the community. And people registered, they came to the classes. Great experience to meet people you'd never would have met, or I would never have met any other way, I'm sure. And so during this program, as people were coming, about 70 or 80 people came through the program in the couple of times that we offered. During this time, I inquired about a certain software program that would help in the administration of the computer training classes that we were offering to the community. And so I sent an email to an unknown person who was located in Australia. He was a businessman at the company for the software. After several emails back and forth, I explained who I was. I gave him the website address for the Aldergrove Church. After a few more days, I received an exciting response. He said this. He said, "I checked out your website, and I watched a video of your sermons. It touched my life in a very powerful way. You see, my wife is a Buddhist, and I am a Christian. She doesn't want me attending church. I want you to know that I will be providing you with 10 licenses of our program for your computer lab free of charge, and I will be making your church website my virtual church from now on." So from the Roman highways to the information highway, God has been using technology to spread the gospel. Zechariah 4, verse 6. "Not by might, nor by power, but by my spirit, says the Lord of hosts." You see, the internet generation of today may never step foot into a church building or a Bible presentation, but are willing to seek out answers in the quiet hours of their home or during their lunch break at work. You know, Walter Wilson, in his book, The Internet Church, and says this, "Questions about God can be asked in complete privacy on the internet. The internet displays no culture, no race, no gender, and no age. It provides a seeker with the ability to navigate his or her way to the foot of Calvary's cross. You can explore the internet in search of answers without having to reveal who you are." You see, the internet sees no country borders. Your church website can be viewed by someone living in Lacombe, Alberta, and someone in Hong Kong, China, both at the same time. We are now living in a global village. A global village. God is doing something incredible. You know, as Christians, we must not be afraid of the internet or see it as just a technology of networked computers. We must see the internet as an evangelistic tool that God is using to tell the world about Jesus. Going back to Matthew 24, the gospel to the whole world. We must recognize that we live in the digital communication age and learn to use the internet as an effective worldwide channel for evangelism as never before. on the night of the Titanic disaster, one of the owners of the White Star Line was summoned to the communications room of the Titanic and handed a Marconigram, much like a telegram. They had just received it from a ship somewhere in the evening ahead of the Titanic. It was a communique, a warning of ice floes and icebergs on the charted pathway of the luxury liner. And do you know what he did with that communication? He took that telegram, he folded it up, he placed it in his pocket, and he returned to the party below. If he had believed and followed the communique, they could have all been saved. Well, I think it's important to make this point. I'm thankful that the lines of communication between us and God are always open. No man or offline technology can ever sever those connections. You know, here are a couple Bible texts that remind us that God always hears our prayer. Psalm 17, verse 6, I call on you, O God, for you will answer me. Give ear to me and hear my prayer. 1 John 5, 14, now this is the confidence that we have in him, that if we ask anything according to his will, he hears us. You know, I'm also reminded of during the Arab Spring, the riots over in Egypt. The government got to the point where they didn't know what to do with this social media activity that was happening as people were organizing and coming together to riot and to protest. And so they decided to shut the internet down. A complete communication blackout. And again, it reminds me that God is always listening. And so, to kind of wrap it up here, 1 Chronicles 12, 32. From Issachar, men who understood the times and know what Israel should do. You know, the social nature of media will continue to converge in ways we cannot imagine during the next 5 years. But as church leaders, it is important to understand the state of social networking and the directions of these technologies. These tools may promise significant benefits to our churches who seek to build community, you know, to mobilize congregations and offer greater interaction with unbelievers. And understanding today leads to better action today and better planning for tomorrow. Thank you.